Before we dive into the episode, make sure you hit subscribe on the podcast platform you're listening on. Also, follow me on X at The Dave Dynasty and subscribe on YouTube by looking up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty. You can also buy one of my shirts at ProWrestlingTees.com/TheDaveDynasty. Now, enjoy the show.
Welcome to 1 hour of the toughest, roughest wrestling you'll ever see.
That's right, Dick the Bruiser said it all.
The big question, have you got the endurance? Have you got the brains to get past the excellence of execution?
The reason why Axe and myself were put on this earth is to demolish people.
Bobby Heenan, that is a very good-looking sport coat you've got on.
Yeah, and I paid for mine. Mine isn't government issue.
Yellow, everybody. Lance Russell and Dave Brown right along ringside. By golly, we're ready to go with another big week of championship wrestling.
Greetings, wrestling fans, and welcome to Wrestling Nostalgia. I'm your host, Dave Dynasty. Thank you for joining me for the first episode of 2025. This is dropping on New Year's Day, so Happy New Year's, everyone. Welcome to 2025. As we closed out 2024, it was a great year here for me on Wrestling Nostalgia. Really quick, the numbers. I had 57 total episodes, which was 41 interviews, 16 special episodes. I had 4 video interviews that are out there, the video versions of the interviews, and 3 first-time podcast guests. So that was a fun year of 2024. Thank you for your support and tuning in. 2025 is going to be even better. I had 41 interviews. I'm going to see if I can bump that number up. And we're kicking it off with a good one today. My guest is Spellbinder. We talk about working in Memphis, his one WWE TV appearance, Bruce Pritchard. You do not want to miss his comments on Bruce Pritchard. And much, much more. That is coming up soon. So let's take a break, and we'll come right back with it then. How was that? That's soon, right? So take a break, and when we come back, I'll have my guest, Spellbinder. Philsinger Games is a tabletop cards and dice game company that has enjoyed success for over 3 decades. Their first game was Champions of the Galaxy and was released in 1986. Champions of the Galaxy is a tabletop game that features professional wrestling over 100 years in the future. Humans, aliens, and monsters battle in the Galactic Wrestling Federation for belts. Legends of Wrestling features officially licensed wrestling cards featuring stars like Ted DiBiase, Jimmy Snuka, Harley Race, and many, many more, including game sets for independent promotions. Each match takes place in real time. The action is fast and furious, and all the things that happen in pro wrestling, like cage matches, outside interference, 3-man tag matches, they also happen in the games. You have the opportunity to run your own wrestling promotion involving either real life stars or fictional characters of the future, or you can mix and match both. Visit PhilsingerGames.com for more information and to order the games today. That is Philsinger Games, PhilsingerGames.com to order now. If you like horror movies, be sure to check out Dave Dynasty and Ike Isaacs on the Listen to Their Screams Horror Podcast. It is available on all podcast platforms and on social media at Listen to Screams. That is Listen, the number 2, and Screams. And welcome back to Wrestling Nostalgia. I'm being joined this time by Spellbinder. Sir, how are you?
Doing great. How about yourself?
I'm all right. I'm good. Let's talk a little bit about your career. First of all, you were trained by the great Johnny Rods, correct?
Man, so I went to his school, and, you know, if we're just going to be 100%, he did teach me a bit, yeah. But one of his main guys, Vito Legrasso, who you guys know as Silver Crush and Big Vito and all that, Vito, you know. Yeah, so him and I, you know, we became pretty cool, and he mainly kept me in the ring and, you know, did everything with me. You know, if I'm going to give anybody credit for training me, it would be Vito, you know, although much respect to Johnny. It was his school.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? And but Vito deserves all the credit, whether yeah. I'm good or bad.
Yeah, I was like Vito, man. He had some good stuff over the years, and his ECW stuff was really good. But yeah, I always liked Big Vito.
Yeah, man, Vito's all right.
Yeah. So when you came out of training, did you go straight to the USWA?
So that's a quick answer. So look what happened. I went into training, and I started going to Johnny Rod's. I was a big guy already. I was very young, but I was 280 pounds, and I was a bodybuilder. And so I had a girlfriend at the time that was training one of Vince McMahon's lawyers, and she had mentioned it to the lawyer. And the lawyer said, "Well, get me a videotape, and I'll get it to Vince, And so she came back. Not, mind you, man, I was, I was green as all get out, man. Locking up and grabbing the arm was really, that was it. Now, what I did have on my side was I was the one that came up with the whole entire character of the Spellbinder with the face paint, the magic. I was a magician when I was a kid, when I was younger.
Yeah.
So I did plenty of magic and stuff. And so she told the lawyer, "Yeah, we'll get a video together." So I went to Vito and told him about my opportunity, and he just looked at me and said, "Whoa." He said, "Man," he goes, "you're not even ready for it." At that time, there was a company that they were out in Jersey and some places in Pennsylvania, WCCW. Mm-hmm, and he said, "You're not even ready for them yet." You know what I mean? And I just, I just shrugged my shoulders like, he goes, "You got the look, definitely. And then you have the, the character." And that time, that's when, Doink the Clown was doing, it was all the golden era stuff,
all
the characters. So Vito helped me put the videotape together. Vito and another gentleman, Julio Torres, who really wasn't, he was an excellent wrestler. He just never did anything with it. But, those two, Vito put a mask on, and I did a lot of, stuff with him on the video, and I did some magic in between, and got the videotape to them. And I got a call from, I think at that time, Sergeant Slaughter was part of the creative talent or the talent deal, and he left me a message and said they would like to talk to me. So I called back. Then JJ Dillon called me, and we finally got on the phone, and he said, "Well, can you come to the Manhattan Center two Mondays from now?" And I said, "Yeah, sure." So I had two weeks to prepare for a tryout, man. So quite honestly, and I can say it now, 25 years later, man, WWF Monday Night Raw was my tryout and my first match ever. So, I did that. And, of course, everybody can see I was green as all get out. I did have the look. I did good magic, and I did get a good over, I got a good response from the people because of the magic and the character and stuff like that. So then they sent me to USWA. They said, "Look, we're going to put you on the contract and send you to Memphis, Tennessee. And we want you to work with Jerry Lawler and all the other guys." So I was essentially the very first, signed guy, that was sent out, to train.
Yeah. Yeah, and when you went to Memphis, right? You used Spellbinder for a bit, and then you switched to Del Rio's.
Yes,
and then you ended up switching back to Spellbinder. What was with the name back and forth? What was it with all that?
All right, so I came in as Spellbinder, did a few matches. Of course, again, I was green as all get out, and here in the Memphis territory, man. When I got to the dressing room, you had Buddy Landale to your right. You had Tracy Smothers to my left. I had Rock and Roll Express across Jeff Jarrett. I mean,
this
is all-star. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And, it was a good gimmick, good character, but I was green. I didn't know much. And so I became really good friends with Brian Christopher, who's, you know, main thing was working out as well. So me and him started riding together. And of course, his dad, Jerry Lawler, whenever we had a show and it was me and him riding, he'd ride with us.
Yeah.
So one Friday night, he says, "Dale, you have TV tomorrow." And I said, "Yeah, I know." And he goes, "Well, look, here's what I'm going to do. I am going to let you wrestle as yourself for a little while. And I'm going to tell you why." He says, "Because the Spellbinder character, it's a really good character. And it's, you know, you got the magic, you got the stuff, and it's a really cool character, but you're going to kill it because you, you know, you still don't know much. And it's obvious. People, you know, people know." And I said, and I went, I went along with it. You know, I said, "Well, you're right. He's, I mean, he's the King Jerry Lawler. You know, who am I?"
Yeah.
He had been wrestling for 20 years and I was just coming in. And he, so I did what he told me and I just, you know, just wrestled as myself. And then once about 8 months later, 9 months later, now you got, the thing about it is I was wrestling every single night, six nights a week for 8 months. So you had no choice, but, you know, but to get better, you know, he's throwing me in there with Doug Gilbert, Brian Christopher, rest in peace, Eddie Gilbert, tagging, you know, with Billy Joe Travis against the Moondogs. I mean, it was just, so he finally, you know, he said, "Hey, you ready to go back to your, character?" And I said, "Sure." You know, and he says, "All right." So I was able to work then, you know what I mean? And then so he said, "Now you're good. Now we can put the character back on you and let you go from there."
Yeah. Yeah. It was, so it was, to protect the character a little bit.
Exactly.
Give it, give it a lot.
I would have killed it.
Yeah. So did, was this the Spellbinder name? Did you come up with that then?
That was my name. Yes. Everything, everything from the outfit to the face paint to the character to everything, you name it, that was mine. Nothing WWF didn't, or WWE didn't do anything. Even when I did, when I did, you know, the few TV tapings that I did and you know, all the house shows, they would call me Fantasio.
And,
and I came up with that and told them to use that, you know. Don't get me wrong, man. I got ribbed quite a few times. I did quite a quite a few house shows, and sometimes my name was Magnificent Maurice. You know, just whatever. And I didn't care. You know, I wasn't gonna mark out on anything. I just went there, did the match, did what I wanted to do, and that was that.
Yeah, and you obviously, like you mentioned, right? The, you know, Spellbinder, all these gimmicks. You were known for doing some magic, right, in your match, and it worked. And you just, you said that you were, you know, you were a magician as a kid. How did that start? How did this love of magic start when you were a kid? And how serious were you about practicing it?
Oh, man. Well, so, you know, when I was young, six, 7 years old, I saw Doug Henning and David Copperfield, you know. I just was very intrigued by it. And, man, I remember going to the library and getting a couple of magic books and, you know, started off small from there.
Yeah.
Then I started, you know, started practicing different sleight of hand, you know, tricks, and started meeting more magicians at the magic shops in New York City.
Yeah.
And man, before you know it, you know, I was full fledged. I was competing as a magician.
Yeah.
You know, so I remember competing and flew to Hawaii to compete, you know, in a magic competition, and did some shows and stuff. And well, I wanted to be, you know, just, you know, world champion in magic.
Yeah.
But, you know, I also loved working out.
Yeah.
You know, so I thought, you know, I thought to myself, well, and you know, to make a living, you know, I wasn't quite there yet to make a living doing magic or as a magician.
Yeah.
So I was training people. I was training people for a living. I was a bodybuilder and I had competed as a bodybuilder. I still loved magic, but then thought to myself, man, you know what? I saw, you know, I took my brother, my younger brother, I remember as a surprise. He was the big wrestling fan. And I took my younger brother to Madison Square Garden. You know, we lived in New York City, which was 10 minutes from Madison Square Garden. So he wanted to go to the wrestling show. And it was like, the main event was Ultimate Warrior versus Mr. Perfect, Kurt Hennig.
Yeah.
And so I bought tickets for me and for me, myself, and somebody else went with us. It might have been a girlfriend or a friend of ours, but I remember sitting there, and the security was walking up and down the aisles. We were about five rows back from ringside, and I remember the security usher slash guy walked by me and stopped and leaned over and says, "What are you doing sitting here? You should be inside there," and pointed at the ring. And my brother just had a fit. You know, he was saying, "I told you. I told you, you could have done this." And I thought, you know, later on, I started giving it thought. I said, wait a minute. All right, so here I am, a big guy. You know, I can do magic. At that time, there was a magician that was a friend of mine, and he was kind of also a mentor to me, Jeff McBride. He did a pantomime act and did magic. And so I thought to myself, well, hold on. If I did the magic and maybe dressed in these tights and maybe took Jeff McBride's face and put it on me, it would be along the lines of, you know, at that time, all the guys were wearing face paint. Warlord, Powers of Pain, Ultimate Warrior, all these guys, Doink.
Yeah.
And I said, man, that's right up my alley. So that's how it all started.
Yeah. Yeah, I've always been fascinated by my father-in-law. I'm originally from Indiana. And my father-in-law owned a magic shop in Indiana and was a practicing magician.
Oh wow!
Did magic auctions, right? Auctioned off estates and things like that, and was very involved. And I would be around that quite a bit. And
wow!
It's fascinating because there's a lot of similarities between magic and wrestling.
Absolutely.
Right? The illusion, the protective nature of it. There's a lot of similarities there.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, it was performing, which is what I liked. I loved it. I loved performing. Yeah. You know, so. It was right up my alley what I wanted to do.
Yeah. Yeah. And early in your career, you were managed by Burt Prentice.
Yes.
Now, Burt Prentice is quite the character. Absolutely. And lots of people have opinions. So what did you think of Burt and working with Burt?
I thought Burt was pretty cool. You know, he was, you know, he liked me, you know, as a person. So he pushed along for me for things that I, you know, that he wanted me to do that would be good for me. I never had anything bad to say about Burt. Later on, I heard that when he turned promoter or whatever, they said some negative things about him, but Burt was a real good guy. You know, it never bothered me that he was a homosexual. That's for sure. You know what I mean? And we rode together to certain towns and stuff. And he was always very respectful to me. You know, we joked around, and you know, he done backed me up. So you know, Burt with me was really a cool guy.
Yeah, yeah. Burt's kind of that that last of the old that old school Carney type, right? Because that's all he did was wrestling, right? You always hear those stories that Burt could go into a town and within a month he'd have TV and be promoting matches, no matter where it was.
That is true, because he had a gift of gab, you know.
Yeah, he could talk anybody into anything, is what you always hear. So
there was quite a few times he, you know, we would go somewhere to eat and we'd end up getting the meal for free. He'd start talking to them, tell them that he goes well, they're Spellbinder. You know, a lot of people didn't know me because of my face paint.
Yeah.
But he'd point and say, "Hey, you guys know who the Spellbinder is? Well, there he comes right there." You know?
Yeah, and I'm always fascinated by that side of wrestling, right? You hear these stories of, like, Iron Sheik going into, you know, some place and eating, and then, like, when the bill comes, he would pull out signed 8x10s to try to pay for his bill.
Oh, like, yeah, that's plenty of times. Oh, he would hustle it, too. He would say, "Hey, say hello." Yeah. He would look at me and say, "Hey, say hello. Say hello. You got any picks in the car? Go get a few picks."
I love that side of wrestling. That's so fascinating.
Yes.
Yeah, and like you said, right? You had this tie to WWE, and then you eventually, made your way up. You got the televised match in '95, and like you said, under the name Fantasio.
Fantasio,
and,
yes.
Yeah, and you know, complete with the magic tricks, lots of different things, right? Pulling the boxer out from the ref and the opponent, different,
right,
all this
right.
different things. So what ended up? How did that end up at that time? That they thought, okay, this is the time for you to come up and let's give you a shot. How did that all come about?
Well, you know, so that wasn't the only one. You know, I did. Oh my God, I couldn't even count of the house shows. See, when I was in USWA, of course we had Saturday morning TV, mm-hmm. and then we have a town later on that night. Sunday, a lot, we were off for sure. Monday, you know, we were booked Mid-South Coliseum or somewhere else. Then Tuesday, Louisville, somewhere in Kentucky, then Indiana. And then yeah. Thursday was somewhere in Tennessee, Arkansas, you know, it was somewhere, you know. And then, and then, of course, Friday was another spot show that we do. So in between that, a lot of times, like, I would do the Mid-South Coliseum. And sometimes it would change sporadically. So I would do like two or three shows in Memphis, in the Memphis territory. And then they fly me out. And then I do, you know, two or three house shows. And then they fly me back in. A lot of times they would fly me out to do Monday Night Raw, you know, the tapings or dark matches or whatever. Then I'd fly back Tuesday to work back. So it was just back and forth flying. To be honest with you, I didn't know what, you know, what the deal was. You know, I knew one thing. I knew to keep my mouth shut and just mm-hmm. keep the job and keep the checks coming in. You know, at that time I was getting a check from WWF and another check from USWA. So why open my mouth and say anything? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Cause no matter what, I was still wrestling every single day. You know, now whether it was in front of 20,000 people or 200 people, I was still working every single day. So, you know, a lot of times I did wonder, you know, but, you know, I Bruno Lauer and Steve Lombardi, which, mm-hmm. you know, is Downtown Bruno or Harvey Whippleman or whatever.
In the Brooklyn
you know,
Brawl,
they taught me, you know, keep your mouth shut. You know, if you make waves, you'll get fired.
Yeah.
You know, so I kept my mouth shut and just let it go as long as, you know, it could. So I was getting, I don't have anything bad to say about WWF/WWE. Believe me when I tell you, I got a check from them for years.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Why do you think it was so start and stop with them? I mean, a magician gimmick seemed like it would have fit right in 1995 WWE. Why do you think they never really got behind it and gave it more of a little longer run? Did they ever tell you why they didn't really commit to giving it
no,
a chance?
No, and you know, I heard rumors. You know what I mean? And rumors that, you know, certain people didn't like certain people from Memphis, or certain people didn't like people from New York City. Silly things like that. You know.
Yeah.
To be 100%. When I look back, that was the dark time in WWF. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Vince was in trouble with some type of
the federal situation.
Yeah, that. And then you could feel the you know, thinking back now as I'm talking, you could feel the stress. You could feel the tension in that dressing room. You know. The dark matches started at 6 and you had to be there at 12.
Yeah.
So everybody's there for 6 hours and you got to be there just sitting around. I mean, it just didn't feel comfortable. A lot of the boys were, you know, you could tell were disgruntled.
Yeah.
You know, there was certain cliques there, you know, and, you know, this is the, you know, these guys, you know, you would get there. You would get there and you're like waiting to see who's being let go.
Yeah.
You know, like I won't forget, you know, and these are all great guys. You know, I remember Mike Drozzi, that was the Duke the Dumpster, which
was
a great guy. You know, he came over here and he goes, "Hey, did you hear?" And I said, "What?" And he says, they let go of Barb just now. And I said, really? And he was like, yeah. He goes, don't say anything to anybody. But then that Adam Bomb, Brian, came over to me.
Yeah.
I says, hey, did you hear that? And I just looked at him and like shrugged my shoulders. You know, it was stuff like that, you know?
Yeah.
Now, when you came back to the Memphis territory, USWA, it was so relaxed.
Yeah.
You know, you'd get there and again, you know, Jeff McBride on one side, Jeff Jarrett on one side, you got PG-13 jacking around all over the place. Bill Dundee, he's there talking. Reggie be fine. You know, all the guys, and we're just, hey, man, what's up? Hey, man, how was New York? I said, it's all right. You know, we just did the match and boom, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, Jerry Lawler, you know, Brian Christopher, you know, Paul Diamond, all of these guys, you know. So,
you
see, and then so, thinking so when if you see the same people up in WWF at the time, WWE, they were about to change it to WWE, they were a little bit more tighter, you know what I mean? When they came down to the South, they were cool as all get out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So you could feel you know, you could feel the difference. You know, it wasn't fun. I mean, from what I've heard, it's not like that anymore. You know, and thank goodness for them. You know, I heard it's I remember doing house shows later on, and it felt looser. It felt looser in the house shows, and there was still Shawn Michaels was on them. I was on them. Dwayne was on them. The Rock was on them. Triple H. It was all the Attitude guys. We were all doing the shows, but it was more relaxed.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. It wasn't so tense. You know, so that was so, but I never got an answer, you know, whether maybe I was horrible or maybe, you know, well, I could just say this. And only reason I'm saying this is because this is the actual truth. I remember in one of the TV tapings, I came back and Savio Vega at the time, he did the TNT gimmick in Puerto Rico.
Yep,
he came to me and he said, in Spanish, he told me, hey, man, that gimmick's going to be on top.
Yeah.
And then I'll never forget, I can't remember who it was. I don't want to mention a name and then it not be them. But one of the guys came to me and I remember, you know why I don't remember him? Because he came when I was washing my face and taking the paint off my face.
Uh-huh.
He says, hey, Dale. Man, that was awesome. He goes, but you might be too good for your own good.
Yeah.
And he said that to me. And I remember, you know, thinking about it. And it's still to this day. He must have known something I didn't. You know what I mean? Because why would he say something like that to me? You know what I mean? I mean, remember Mabel, rest in peace, came over to me. Goes, oh, man, that was good stuff right there. You know, even Scott Hall said, hey, man, I'll never forget Scott saying, hey, man, that gimmick right there has got some potential.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So I didn't, I didn't want to beat myself up over it because can't cry over spilled milk. Whatever was going on was going to go on and there was nothing I can do about it. So I just continued what I was doing, you know, so I would, you know, be in the Memphis territory, you know, a couple of days, then back up north for another few days, back and forth. And that happened for years. And, you know, that's the way that ended up.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, wrestling is such an odd business, right? It's so political and this and that. And
big time.
You know, other people, right? No matter how good you are, there's other people that still control your level of success.
Exactly.
No matter what you do.
Yes.
So, how have you heard and how do you respond when? There's a guy like Bruce Pritchard, right? Here recently in the last few years. I don't mean like in the last couple of days or whatever, but he has kind of spoke down about your televised match and the potential. Why? I mean, but you know, Bruce, you don't know what Bruce, he speaks at both ends and you don't know what's what with him.
Right.
How do you respond to a guy like that? And I mean, you know, it's a hindsight thing, right? If they didn't give you an opportunity, you know, maybe he's just saying this. But how do you feel and how do you respond when Bruce is, he's kind of dogging on your appearances and whatever else? And
Well, do you remember when I said earlier that certain people didn't like me, or you know, rumors. You know, being that you mentioned his name, he was one of them that for some reason didn't like me. Maybe because I didn't kiss his butt. You know what I mean? Because quite honestly, Bruce Prichard is nothing but a stooge.
Yeah,
he's always been a stooge. Okay, and this comes from men like Sid Vicious, who was him and I were super tight. You know, Duke the Dumpster Drozzy.
Yep.
You know, I remember we were in, we were somewhere. We were either in Houston. We were either in Houston or Evansville, Indiana. And he came over to me and says, "Hey, Dale." And I said, "Yeah." And he says, "Your name tonight is the Magnificent Maurice." And I looked at him and I shrugged my shoulders. I said, "Okay." And I kept putting my paint on.
Yeah, and this is Bruce you're talking about.
Yes, that's Bruce.
Yeah, okay.
And Bruce, the biggest two-faced trash I've ever met, to be honest with you. Yeah. So look at this. And this happened because I was there and I witnessed the whole thing myself.
Yeah.
We were in Houston, Texas, and they wanted to take a look at me again for the 30th time. And so I wrestled PJ. I wrestled Aldo Montoya.
Yep. Uh-huh.
And PJ came over to me and goes, "Hey, Dale, what do you want to do?" And I said, "Well, dude, you're a baby face, so I'm gonna be the heel. So of course, you know, I'm gonna do some heel stuff. Let's, you know, but bump me around. You know, I want them to see that I can go." He said, "Okay, sounds good to me." Anyway, so I went out, you know, and did a little bit of Memphis style healing on the people and stuff like that. I got out there, I did some magic effects, you know what I mean? Took my jacket out, then boom, PJ and I. Now, mind you, I told PJ, bump me around. In other words, arm drag. So we were doing spots, arm drag, body slam, hip toss. I'll get up, powder, get back. I'm going to come back, you know, duck my clothesline, start arm dragging me. I mean, put it this way, you know, I was bumping. So at the end of the match, I was so blown up, but I mean, I was working, but I was blown up because good Lord, you know, I had bumped my rear off. Right.
Yeah.
So I'm walking up the ramp. Excellent. It was a great match. The people popped big time with the finish and everything. And Aldo did a great job as well. But so I'm walking up the gorilla and, Jamie Dundee is with Ahmed Johnson because they were doing the Nation of Domination thing. They were on the side. As soon as I walked in, Jamie ran to me. He goes, "Bro, all the boys in the back were popping about how you was bumping and this and that." He said, "Rest in peace, Arnold Skolin," who was one of the agents at the time, one of the older guys, said, "Man, who's that boy bumping like that?" Okay, he said a couple of the other boys were like, "Man, I didn't know Dell can go like that." Okay, so now, as I'm walking, I turn. Bruce Prichard is right by the gorilla behind the cameras, behind the screens there where he can see what's going on. He can't see my head, but Jerry Lawler walked over to him. He goes, "Well, I didn't get to see it, but it sounded good. The people were popping." And he goes, "How was that?" And Bruce Prichard went, "Eh." and then King looked at him and went, "Huh?" And he went, "Eh," again. And then I popped my head around. Bruce saw me and at the same time, Jerry Lawler asked him, "Was it not good?" And then Bruce, like I said, Bruce saw me simultaneously and said, "No, it was good. It was good. It was a good match." You know, he just had he couldn't put it over.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? He couldn't put it over. But he, listen, I must have had an effect on his fat butt because he's still talking about me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
he definitely is.
So if he listens to this, you know, I've done a couple of other podcasts and never mentioned him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I know, you know, he was part of the whole deal. You know what I mean? Yeah. Whatever. Yeah. And that's okay. I'm happy. I did what I did. You know what I mean? But
Nobody's
saying anything bad about Del Rios, about Spellbinder, Fantasio. You know what I mean? Because I treated everybody with respect. I never looked down on anybody. You know what I mean? But guess what? Bruce, everybody knew Bruce was a stooge. That's all he was. And then when he came a few times to Memphis, he would stop and run up to me and say, "Hey, Dale, how you doing?" This and that. And I would just look at him and just was respectful. You know what I mean? About, "Hey, Bruce, how you doing?" But I knew he's nothing but a two-face.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I'm just being honest right now. And I feel, you know, and if I saw him and he said hello to me, I say hello to him, you know. But, you know, this is what happened. You know, this is where we are. He maybe he don't think I know all this or whatever. And I quite honestly, I haven't listened to any of the podcasts he's done because I'm not really not interested. But I have heard that he did a podcast about me that I sucked and I wasn't a good wrestler or whatever.
Yeah.
And another one that something about fire or whatever, which was not true at all. He's magnifying it. He just needs content for his junk. And and that's fine. You know, it's perfectly fine. And I hope he hears this.
Well, yeah. And I don't really listen to stuff either. I came across it doing some research and, you know, it just clips, but,
Well, you know, it's one thing when you go to one of the boys, and again, I'm not going to mention their names, but when you go to one, "Hey, what about Bruce?" He goes, "Oh, he's a stooge." You know what I mean? And then, "Hey, man," ask one of the other boys, hey, what about Bruce Pritchard?" He goes, "He's retarded." You know, I mean, this is literal boys telling me this. And I'm like, all right, well, then it's not just me then.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, and well, let's switch back to your career. Now, during the end of your USWA run, when Randy Hales was a little more in charge, you kind of switched away from the Spellbinder name. Was that your ideal, or was that something that was suggested by Randy?
Yeah, Randy wanted to try something new. You talking about when I did like the streak thing on Power?
Yeah, correct.
You know, he wanted to see if we can do something else, you know, and have some fun with it, and I was okay with it. Again, I was still working 6 days a week. You know what I mean? So, and I knew the Spellbinder, you know, was going to always be the Spellbinder and stuff. And that'd be a good way for you not to waste the gimmick away, you know?
Sure. Yeah.
And so, you know, and then, so when Power Pro closed down a few years later, I came back as the Spellbinder and refreshed everybody and people, you know, it was like it started all over again, you know. So it was a good break for a little bit.
Yeah. And another little gimmick switch you did was you were part of the Memphis version of, like we mentioned, of the Nation of Domination.
Yeah.
And you were, I think they called you Elijah, correct?
Yes. They wanted me to come back as a heel. See, well, they wanted me to come back as Spellbinder the heel. And he said that was Jerry Lawler's idea, by the way. He was booking it, and he said, "Look, here's what we'll do. We'll bring you in with the Nation of Domination, and then you'll start branching out on your own." So I came in, and that was fun, you know what I mean? That was fun to be with Tracy Smothers and Jackie Miss Texas and PG-13 and stuff.
And Randy Hales, right? He was a part of that. It was Randy X, Tracy was Shaquille Ali, right? There was, you know, some comedy involved, but it worked, right? I mean, Tracy Smothers is the king of getting over wrestling comedy in the right way.
That's hilarious. Yes, he was hilarious.
Yes, he was. What a guy Tracy Smothers was.
A man. He was one of the nicest people in the business. Respected everybody. Never ribbed anybody, never played around. And if you needed help and you had a question, he'd take his time and answer it, you know.
And he
was just one of those guys like that, helpful. Him, rest in peace. Buddy Landell, rest in peace. Billy Joe Travis, rest in peace. You know, those guys were cut out of the same material.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you also, in Power Pro, for a while, you also wrestled under the name Streak.
That was what they were doing before. Remember, we were giving Spellbinder a break. and letting me wrestle as that character Streak, which really was a pain because I had to do a streak in my hair. You know,
yeah, what I mean? Right. Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Right. So was that a Randy Hales ideal?
That was me, Randy, and it was me and Randy. Yeah, I think it was. I guess it was me, just me and Randy. Let's see. Yeah, it was me and Randy. Yeah, he thought. No, I thought it would be good to give Spellbinder a break. You know, I had turned heel. No, I was babyface, then I turned heel, then I turned back to babyface, and I thought, all right, let me give this thing a break, and come up with something different for a little while.
Yeah,
and that's what we did. You know, I thought it was good, just like I said, just to give Spellbinder a break.
Yeah, well, and you also wrestled as a Shock, teaming with another wrestler named Awe.
Yes, that, so you like, know, and it, we took that, and again, what you know why that happened was, so that professional bodybuilder Ian, I can't remember his name. Ian, he was from England, and Jimmy Hart. Uh-huh. You know, had that Jimmy Hart had the XWF in Florida.
Yeah, right.
Okay. And so they did a taping, and he Ian Harrison, that was his name, Ian Harrison, pro bodybuilder. So you know, he was huge, and they wanted him to continue to wrestle, and so he needed, you know, he was very green and very stiff. So I remember, I'll never forget it, King called me and said, hey, Dale, we got this guy, you know, I'm thinking maybe we need to tag him up with you because you're both bodybuilders. You're super huge, and you can help him get through the matches while he's learning and stuff. And I said, okay, who is it? And he goes, Ian Harrison. And I thought, oh, I know who he is because I was a bodybuilder. So he was in the bodybuilding magazines, he was in the big pro shows and stuff. So I said, oh yeah, okay. And then he goes, what do you think for a name? And I said, well, let me think about it. And you know, I mean, remember we left it like that. And I remember reading something, and that was the on one of the missions where the United States bombed, it was meant for Iran or Iraq. Mm-hmm. And one of the missions was Shock and Awe.
Oh yeah.
And I remember calling King and going, hey, what do you think of this? Shock and Awe. He went, oh, there you go. Yeah, there you go. That's good. You know? You know, the Americans and the English are allies. So I wore the red, white, and blue tights, and he wore the British flag tights.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? So that was what it was. Then we kept calling it a coalition and stuff like that, you know.
Yeah,
we
had some fun
with that as well. But Spellbinder was always my main character.
Right. Yeah. So when you wrestled for Power Pro, right, there was a lot of WWE developmental guys that were coming through there. How did you get along with those guys?
You know, I got along with them really, really well. Kurt Angle,
Daniel Bryan,
Daniel Bryan, Steve Bradley, Victoria, Molly Holly,
yeah,
the little one that played Bob Holly's little partner.
Oh yeah, Crash Holly, yeah, uh-huh.
Crash. Yeah. You know what I mean? All of those guys, you know, and I worked all of them. We got along really good. All of them. We all got along really good.
Yeah. Yeah. So did during this time also, right, Ohio Valley Wrestling was also kind of a developmental. Did you ever have any contact with Jim Cornette about coming into Ohio Valley?
No, I didn't. I knew Jim when he came in to Memphis a number of times. Great guy. You know,
yeah.
You know, we talked a bunch, and, you know, I want to say, when I was invited to Ohio Valley, Danny Davis was running it.
Yeah, right.
Danny Davis was running it. So no, not when Jim, not when Jim was there. No, but and not only that, they were all packed with, you know, the other guys. You know, John Cena was there.
Yeah,
all the other guys. You know.
Yeah, they had a lot of developmental guys there. Randy Orton, Brock Lesnar, all those guys were going through there.
Yes, yeah, so they were packed with that, and so you know, and I was already positioned here on this side really well. You know what I mean? Where I didn't ever have to worry about being booked or, you know, what they were doing with me or anything like that. You know, I was pretty much established.
Right. Yeah. And yeah, you quote unquote retired from wrestling in 2005, right? I say quote unquote because, you know, it's
no, I
retirement wrestling is who knows. It's
exactly.
It's fluid.
Well, what happened in 2005? Let's see. No, so in 2006, 2007, maybe it was a little bit later, I started bodybuilding.
Uh-huh.
I went back to bodybuilding, and what happened was, I remember I started prepping for a bodybuilding competition. So when you're prepping for a bodybuilding competition, your calories are really low.
Yeah.
So you're losing a lot of body fat, you know, so mm-hmm. you're getting shredded. Now, what happens, you know, when your body gets really, really lean, you're more susceptible to getting hurt.
Sure. Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I knew better. So I said, okay, I got to take a break from wrestling. So in between competitions, whenever I gained my, you know, a lot of weight back, not a lot, but, you know, whenever I was, you know, a little bit higher in body fat, I would start doing shots again, you know. And then in 2000 in 2015, I went to do I had competed in a bodybuilding show. And a few weeks later, Brian Christopher, rest in peace, I was doing it, was promoting a big show in one of the casinos.
Uh-huh.
And he kept telling me, oh, I need you on the show. You know, I need you to work. I don't know who you're going to work, but, you know, it might be Jeff Jarrett. It might be my dad. It might be this guy, that guy. He had a bunch of WWF guys on there, WWE guys. And I said, okay, I'll do it. But right in the middle of the match, well, no, not in the middle, almost when it was over, I tore my patella in my right knee, which I knew better to have done that. But because Brian was my best friend, you know, I didn't want to say no to him.
Yeah.
So that, you know, I had to recover from that. And then I went back to bodybuilding and started competing. And, you know, I was still getting a lot of calls, you know, to do certain shots or appearances and stuff. And I just said, no, not right now. I'm not doing it, you know. Just got the itch back when they inducted me into the Memphis Wrestling Hall of Fame. And I put my face paint on and I said, man, okay, you know, let me do some more stuff. So I've been getting booked for appearances and shows, and you know, I'm available.
Yeah,
you know, to do them. You know, if anybody needs me on there.
Yeah, yeah, and that's what I was going to ask about next. Was you're right, getting inducted in the Memphis Hall of Fame. You know, Spellbinder is obviously you think Spellbinder, you think Memphis, right?
Yes.
Because that's where you made your most appearances.
Yes, sir.
What was that like for you? I mean, because the Memphis Hall of Fame, there's some great names, and some great names that you went in with this year.
Exactly.
What was that like going in there?
I remember sitting in the back remembering the first day that I got to Memphis. Well, I got there on a Friday night, and I was on TV the next morning. Mm-hmm. I remember, and I was reminiscing. I was in the back, and there was Jerry Lawler, and on the other side was Danny Davis, Tom Pritchard.
Yeah.
Tom Pritchard, Jamie Dundee, Wolfie D, a number of the other guys, you know, that were there. Bill Dundee, of course. I think maybe I might have mentioned him. But I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, I said, man, I remember the first day I walked in, and these were the same guys, you know what I mean, that were there. And here we are getting inducted into the Hall of Fame. You know what I mean? And I was like, wow, you know. you know, you think, you know, you're gifted, you're blessed to be able to say that you're going to go into the Hall of Fame with these guys.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, it was quite an honor for me, you know, because, and I hate to even, you know, it's like, I hate to even say it because it just feels like, but whenever you, people sent me certain posters or they would email me stuff. And then it said Memphis Wrestling Legends. And there's my picture next to Bill Dundee and Jerry Lawler and, you know, Bill, Dutch Mantel and all these other guys. And I'm like, wow, you know, you never thought that was going to happen, you know, 20 years ago. Yeah, 25 years ago, you know.
Yeah. So, I mean, I imagine it's hard to fathom. You know, you mentioned it with those guys.
Yes, and, very hard. Yeah, very hard. Yeah. You know? And then I was in the ring with them every other day. You know what I mean? I mean, I remember.
Well, I mean, Jerry Lawler is never has retired, right? I mean,
he's still doing all kinds of appearances. Yeah. Matter of fact, I did an appearance with him a few weeks ago. You know what I mean? And I looked over, and you know, I was like, man, you know. Here we are still, you know, we're still trucking, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So you mentioned, right, the bodybuilding stuff and doing some of that stuff. What other kind of things you've been up to since kind of backing down the wrestling schedule a little bit?
You know, I'm still training. I still work out in the gym a few hours a day. You know, one of the biggest compliments I've ever had was about a month ago. I was doing an appearance and they wanted me in full costume, and I said sure, no problem. Oh, I remember, they wanted me to do a run in the ring, and Jerry Lawler was in the back, a few of the other guys were in the back, I can't remember all of them, but one guy that had, I remember him being in the shows and on TV at the TVs, you know, years ago. I remember coming out and I had my outfit, and I went out to another room because they had a big mirror, and I put my face paint on, and I walked in to the room where Jerry Lawler and a few of the other guys were at. And this guy walked in, and I turned around, and he looked at me, and he said something to King, and he looked at me, and he says, Dale. And I says, hey, man. And he says, oh, my God. He said, man, you look like you walked out of TV 20 years ago. And I said, I just smiled at him. I said, thank you. I appreciate that. You know, I'm not 295 pounds anymore. I don't want to be that heavy. It started to take its toll on my health. But I'm still 250 pounds, which, you know, is still not a small guy. And, you know, I kept my, you know, all my muscle. And, you know, I enjoy training. I enjoy, you know, getting out there and pushing my body to the limit. You know, some people enjoy a beer or a drink or whatever. And I enjoy going to the gym.
Yeah, and like you mentioned, right, you're looking to take some booking, make some appearances.
Absolutely. And, you know, my biggest fear, I don't want anyone ever going, man, what happened to that guy, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I remember being younger and guy walking in the gym and a couple of the other guys would go, man, a few years ago, that guy was jacked. Oh, man. Yeah. I don't know what happened to him. And I thought to myself, good Lord, I don't ever want that to be a conversation in the gym about me.
Yeah.
You know, so that's what keeps me motivated.
Yeah. So how then, what's the best way? If fans want to follow you and keep track of what you're doing, or if somebody wanted to get a hold of you about a potential booking or an appearance, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
Man, look me up on Facebook. I'm on Facebook under Del Rios.
Yep.
Or you can email me at delrios43@gmail.com. Or if worse comes to worse and you can't find me on Facebook or delrios43@gmail.com, they get a hold of you.
That's, you know, right.
You can get a hold of me.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I'll put them in touch. No doubt.
Absolutely.
And, Dale, man, I appreciate you giving me time. I felt like we could have talked for a long time, but I wanted to, you know, kind of keep it to a nutshell over your career.
Yeah,
you've done a lot of fascinating. Memphis wrestling is so fascinating, and so many people love it, and
right.
Because it's, you know, one of the longest running promotions. It's such an influential promotion or territory, and so many great guys came in there. And,
exactly.
And
I mean, if it wasn't for Memphis Wrestling USWA, a lot of guys would have never done anything. I realized that there was other things out in Georgia and Texas. But even at the time when I came in, you know, they said, I mean, the office and all the boys, he goes, anybody that was anybody came through here.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, Memphis is always kind of a standard, it's held, right? They say everybody came through Memphis. When right. they talk about, like, ECW and some of those promotions, they always say, oh, ECW was like, you know, Memphis North. It was like they took Memphis and kicked it up a notch. And
that's right.
And all
yeah.
this and that. Yeah, so,
yeah.
Yeah, so it's you know, and you definitely made your mark in Memphis and everything else, and that's man, that's something to be said. And it's like I said, it was a pleasure to talk to you.
Absolutely,
and,
I appreciate you and the pleasure being on here.
Yeah, and like I said, if anybody can't get a hold of you or whatever, yeah, they can always come through me. I'll make sure they get in touch with you, and yeah, and maybe down the road sometime we can touch base again and do a part two.
Yeah, we'll definitely do it again. My career is taking off again. You know, I'm
booked
at several wrestling conventions. I'll be in North Carolina, Ohio, all
there
kinds of stuff written up. So, you know, like I said, anybody that wants to, you know, get a hold of me, they can use my email, get a hold of you, or go to Facebook and we'll hook up.
Yeah. Well, everybody look up Del Rios on Facebook, keep track of where he's at, and try to catch him when he's in your area, because he's out there. He's making the towns again.
Absolutely. And,
hey guys, Ray Russell here, curator of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network, inviting you guys to listen to many of the programs here as part of the WrestleCopia brand, including, but not limited to, the Wrestling Memory Grenade, currently covering the 1988 and the WWF project. You can also listen to the Regional Wrestling Podcast, where we talk the territories, whether it's Jamie Ward with Georgia 81, Roman Gomez with the UWF in 1986, or Gene Jackson covering Memphis in 85. Three projects going on right now over there at Regional Wrestling. You can also listen to The Wrestling Stoop with the legend himself, Bob Roop. Bob goes back in time each and every week, covering not just his career, but countless stories and interactions with hundreds of wrestling names spanning his two decades in the business. But that's not all. You can also check out the Puro Wrestling Academy with the professor of Puro Resu, Mr. Dan Ginnity. Dan and I go back in time and cover the history of Japanese professional wrestling in the English language. And you can listen to all of those shows and more, all part of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network, located over at WrestleCopia.com. That's WrestleCopia.com, and anywhere your podcast streaming needs are met, from Apple to Spotify, Pocket Cast, and beyond. And while you're at it, why not subscribe to our social media guys for all the latest goings on here at the WrestleCopia Podcast Network. Plus, I'm constantly adding old school video clips and pictures from throughout wrestling history. You can follow us over on X, formerly Twitter, at Wrestling Grenade. That's at RASSLIN Grenade. Also, follow and like me, Facebook.com/Wrestling Grenade. And why not subscribe to YouTube.com/Wrestling Grenade? So if you're looking to support that next up-and-coming podcast brand, please consider making it WrestleCopia.
Hey, it's Bob Smith, and guess what? The Outdated Wrestling Hour is now part of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network. But hey, no fear, you're still going to hear the unique guests, comedy, music, authors, journalists, funny people. Who knows who's going to end up on the Outdated Wrestling Hour? Remember, it's all new and all old. So check it out in the WrestleCopia Podcast Network and wherever you get your podcasts. Listen if you know what's good for you.
Hey everybody, Gene Jackson here, inviting you to check out the Retro Wrestling Review, where each week I'm joined by some great co-hosts who help me review classic episodes of USWA Championship Wrestling, and right now we are doing week-by-week reviews of 1993. But we don't just do reviews. Sometimes we get a chance to interview some of the people who were there and lived it, plus do watch-alongs. It's a lot of fun, so check out new episodes that drop every Wednesday at WrestleCopia.com. And to find links to everything associated to the podcast, you can go to USWAPodcast.com.
All right, I'm back here on Wrestling Nostalgia. Thank you to Spellbinder for coming on the show and talking. What a good guy. We'll have him back on in the future to talk more about his career in Memphis wrestling. Guys, make sure you follow me on social media. I'm on pretty much any platform. Just look up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty or look up The Dave Dynasty, and I am out there. Go check out all the other WrestleCopia Network of podcasts. I had a good year in 2024, and WrestleCopia had a great year in 2024, and 2025 is going to be even better. More regional wrestling topics and episodes coming up, including one with me, yours truly, covering the WWA. So watch for those coming up. You can look up all those podcasts on your favorite podcast platform or go to WrestleCopia.com. Also, be sure to check out my friends at the Ultimate Classic Wrestling Library. Go to ClassicWrestling.net or download the Ultimate Classic Wrestling app on all of your devices. Now, I haven't, I talked about 2025 is going to be a great year for interviews and episodes. Next episode is going to be super fun. My guest is Fumi Saito. He is the preeminent expert, journalist, and author about Japanese wrestling. But he and I are going to specifically talk about Dick the Bruiser's tours of Japan. So that is a fun topic. Fumi is the expert, knows all about it. And we talk about Bruiser in Japan. So don't miss that episode. Subscribe to us now. Thank you to you all the listeners, the supporters, for all the follows, the interactions, the comments, the shares, everything else, for keeping Wrestling Nostalgia on the wrestling podcast charts pretty much all year. We've been there in one capacity or another, all over the place, but yet on the charts nonetheless. Thank you, guys. The growth continues. I suspect it'll continue in 2025, and that is thanks to you. So help us out. Tell a friend. Recommend us, rate and review us, share our posts on social media, interact with me. I'm always available. You can message me to talk about something, to ask a question. And I'm always available if you want to send an email. I'm at dave@davedynasty.com. If you want to give me any feedback or if you have a question or comment, a story to tell, anything else, get a hold of me. I love all that. So I am appreciative. So, hey, let's get out of here. The first episode of 2025 in the books. Thank you once again for listening. And guys, always remember, wherever you go and whatever you do, be good, be safe, and always keep on growing.
Fans, we brought you All-Star Championship Wrestling. This is Sam Manager thanking you for being with us and saying until next time, so long, everyone.